Now, I read recently that Messi only has one foot. This is the Lionel Messi, footballer who plays for Barcelona. That's ridiculous. I've seen him play football. Now, he might not be the quickest there's ever been, but he's pretty agile. Surely he has 2 feet. Ryan Giggs, in his famous wonder goal that he scored against Arsenal in the 1999 FA Cup semi-final, touched the ball 37 times before he actually scored. And only 4 of those touches were with his right foot. This is because, like Messi, he's predominantly a left-footed player. Both of them actually have right feet, and they both need their right feet. How would they manage if they only exercised their wonder left foot? How would they perform if they only put a boot on their left foot? How would they get on if they tied their right foot out of the way because it was a nuisance? You see, these players, like Messi and Giggs, along with others like Gareth Bale and Dennis Bergkamp, are supremely talented. So even if they appear to have a limitation or something missing, they almost turn it into a strength. Now, you might say, well, that's all right saying that, but I actually am that right foot, and it's not much fun. And I'm not particularly talented, and I don't appear to be needed. I'm not cool or fashionable in any way. Now, I'm not being neurotic, but I do wonder sometimes, what's the point? Where's my place in life and in the church? So I've carved out a way of doing things that minimises depending or working with other people. I avoid that complication. It's easier and safer to be independent, and the society I'm part of encourages me to be independent. I have to have my own pension scheme, I have to have my savings, my house, I have to be able to function by myself, make my own way in life. It's too difficult and complex to get everyone to be reasonable and play their part, so I'm not going to do it. I can't rely on people, so I'll do my own thing. So I wonder if God has something to say about this, and this is why we read 1 Corinthians 12. Paul's writing to a very lively community. It's a community that had its issues. So he's not writing a chapter in a textbook or an essay or a learned paper. This is a real letter to real people, just like you and I. Elsewhere in the New Testament, we spot Paul and others using this analogy of the body in other places and in other ways. But don't think that Paul is posing this kind of question. He's not saying, if you're thinking of being part of us, if you would like to join in, or if you would find it valuable to get involved, then come along. That's not what he's saying. What he's saying is, no, you are part of God's community, and this is how it works. He's not actually offering any options. See, almost what he's saying is that being part of God's community is a counterbalance to having your own ideas and your own say and your own way of doing things. You may say this or that, but actually you live as part of a community. You may have this idea, but you have to put it to the test in this community. Now, my wife's father, Harry, was a precision engineer, had his own business in Preston, and he had a good working relationship with Baxi, the boiler people. They still make combi boilers and others. Occasionally they would go to him with a new design for a boiler. And they'd say, Harry, have a look at this. See if you can put the drillings in that are necessary, the connections that we would need. It's all right having an innovative boiler design, but you have to be able to build it in to a conventional system. And he'd be given the boiler, the prototype, and he'd have to see whether it would work. I think the church is a little bit like that. You, as an individual, need to see whether you can fit in with the wider community. Can you make the connections? Will you be able to function in this group? You can't operate in isolation. People sometimes put it like this. Yes, I'm happy to have a faith, but can't I have a faith on my own? And it's commonly called spirituality. There's lots of spirituality about, but there's lots of counterfeits. Or they'll say, can't I have a faith which is just me and God? And I'll define what that's like. It works for me. Nobody else can make a comment or be a part of that. I think the biblical concept is that you have a faith which is me, God, and my community. That's far safer. Some people say that the incarnation means that Jesus dignifies the physical. So he went to a wedding, he ate food with his friends, he met people's needs, he joined people in all kinds of activities. But I think he actually did more than just dignify the physical. I think he demonstrated that being physical is an essential part of being a human being. And being in fellowship with other people is an essential part of being that physical human being. So the point is this. What God is saying to us this morning is it's impossible for you to see growth without sharing in fellowship. You will not become more like Jesus Christ without sharing in fellowship. Being in partnership with believers is essential. And this idea of partnership, that word can be used instead of fellowship. They're very similar words. But we understand partnership, don't we? We use that frequently in the business world where we share in the profits and the losses, where we share in the risks and the pleasures of success. So the fact is, and the point is this, you need other believers. Now, you might raise the objection, well, that's all well and good, but actually today I'm by myself, and I will be for the next 14 days. Well, what I suggest to you is that this is an opportunity, a time, to reach out. You could be in a room full of people and not engaging with them. You could be just taking part in polite nothings. So first of all, I suggest that you reach out to God, and you have all those means available to you wherever you are. And we've been talking about them in previous weeks, particularly Peter talking about spiritual disciplines. And then reach out to your friends, your family, your neighbours, brothers and sisters. Be creative. Think of ways of doing it. Oh, you may have a further objection, and I'll only give you two objections this morning. A further objection. Well, I've done this kind of thing before, and it hasn't gone well. I can show you some of the fallout. Well, I'm not suggesting that you be naive, and you could have had broken relationships or difficult relationships in the past, and even if they've been forgiven, it doesn't mean that they are going to work or be strong relationships in the future. But there's always room for further attempts, for new attempts. Always room. With prayer and grace, we can investigate new relationships. Sometimes we have to put on, P patience, kindness, and courage as though it was a garment. This is how I'm going to conduct myself today in this conversation. Oh, well, that doesn't fit my personality. Oh, this is a third objection. I'll allow you a third objection on this occasion. It's not within my personality type to do that sort of thing. I'm quite self-contained, actually. I'm not the effusive, outgoing type. I'm happy with my own company. Well, we're not talking about how you interact with people. We're not talking about your style or the intensity of your interaction with people. You see, God is very comfortable with you. You need to be comfortable with yourself. Don't mistake the fact that building a relationship or relationships can be rigorous and difficult with whether you should be doing it or not. So you might have a personality type which doesn't make it apparently so easy, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't be doing it. You see, despite the dangers, there really is no alternative, because you do need other people. But I have some good news for you. Jesus is on your side. Maybe that's a little bit of a cliche, but Jesus, we're told, is the head of the church, God's people. He's the groom for the bride, the church. He's the overseer of God's people. If you want to put it into modern terms, he's our team captain. That has to be good news, doesn't it? That has to be good. He's given to us, each individual who has come to Jesus in faith, he's given us his spirit in order that there is a common purpose among God's people. In fact, he died in order to ensure our forgiveness and our reconciliation to God. Not just so we could do that in isolation and be pleased with ourselves, but in order that we might bring reconciliation to all of our relationships, however that's received. I've had the experience of people not receiving my overtures. You will have as well. That's not grounds for not doing it. Yeah, I want to mention something controversial. It's always useful to have something controversial to chew over your Sunday lunch. Did Jesus die in order to produce the church? How do we read Ephesians 5:25? And he gave himself for her, the church. Is therefore the church his legacy? Well, that was his aim. Coming to earth, dying, producing the church. Now he's gone and that's what's left. Is that what Jesus was about? Or did he die in order to redeem the whole creation, including his people? And in fact, the church is his nursery. It's a place where you can be strengthened and you can grow in a controlled environment before being planted out in the more rigorous climate in the world. Answers on a postcard. Let me tell you a story. Claire and I once lived in a modest-sized village in North Wales, and one of the dustbin men in the village was called Edwin. Edwin had what I think you would call learning difficulties, had some additional needs. Everybody knew Edwin. It was in the days when health and safety didn't appear to apply, or certainly not in villages in Wales. Edwin would ride on the back of the dustbin wagon and shout and wave to everybody as he passed you in the street. He went to the local pub and he was a keen fisherman, and you could spot him by the side of the lake frequently. Everybody knew him. It was a village of about 1,500 people. Everybody accepted Edwin. Nobody in their right mind would have given Edwin a hard time or not shown him respect. But interestingly, behind Edwin was his mum. Now, I never met his mum. I don't know what she looked like. I wouldn't have known her if I'd passed her on the street. but she made sure that all was well for Edwin. In a kind of old-fashioned sort of way, he was always well turned out. He was fed and he was watered and he was looked after. He was given a platform for a full life. And believe me, Edwin was an essential part of the village. The village wouldn't have been the same without Edwin, and nor would he have been the same without that village to live in. So, what about you and me this morning? What are we going to do this morning with this idea that we cannot really function as Christians without those people around us? Well, maybe we have an opportunity in these strange moments to get off that treadmill. Make the investment in other people. Yeah, there are obstacles, but there are always obstacles. Aren't there always obstacles? Here's the time and here's the need. What about as the summer comes on and the weather improves and you're stuck at home, you actually could have a conversation with your neighbour across the fence? I think that would be allowed. When you make contact with somebody, however you do that, take an interest in them. Ask them some questions about themselves. Have you thought about Zoom? We had an interesting leadership team at Crag last night and we all Zoomed one another while we were in the room. If I can do it, you can do it. If you have a mobile phone, a smartphone, download the app Zoom and you can have conversations with groups of people and see them at the same time. What about if when you're feeling up to it, you make contact and befriend somebody who is lonely or perhaps that difficult person? What about applying prayer to all of these things and asking God for the assistance that you need? And of course, there are things that we can do together which we may not prefer to, and that's just as good for us as doing the things together that we enjoy. I want you to try and imagine what the church would be like if it functioned in this way. We wouldn't be a gated community. Do you know what the concept of a gated community is? Many of you will. There are gated communities in Leeds. That's where you buy in to, let's call it a housing estate, which has a wall around it, and you usually have to use a swipe card or something to get in the gate. And within that gated community, you can pretty well guarantee that people will be of a similar type. They'll certainly have to have a certain size bank balance. They'll likely be a certain colour. They'll likely have a certain political standpoint. And so you enter a gated community and you presume that everybody's going to be like you and you're going to get on with them fine. Doesn't actually work like that, of course. But the church is not a gated community. The church contains people of all types and backgrounds, each of them coming to their potential under God. It can be rugged and testing. But it's not the weaker giving way to the strong, but it's a real and vibrant community. We're not talking about uniformity, we're talking about difference. But it's somewhere where it's safe to be different. It's the perfect training ground, a place to test and to be put to the test, a safe place to fail. I think when the church is functioning well, it's one of the most exciting things to consider and to be part of. It's a glimpse of what God wants, an idea of what a perfectly managed community or society would look like. I love the book of Ruth in the Old Testament, and maybe one of the reasons for that is that when you read the book of the Ruth, you see God's ideas at work in people caring for one another, everybody being essential, everybody being valuable, everybody having their place. So let's pursue this together. Let's invest in the Inspire movement, which helps us to see growth in God. Remember that we must be sharing in fellowship It's impossible for us to be like Jesus without the help and the influence of the Christian community around us. So if you want further information, then you can email Matt Wright, you could email me or Peter Morden. Look on the church website. There's more material about the Inspire movement. And thank you very much for listening this morning. And may God bless you at this very difficult and strange time.